This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Money Manager Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is Tuesday, February 17th, 2015, edition of Invest Talk, and I welcome all of our listeners listening up and down California and our those online via our podcast networks as well. We are glad you are here with us. Happy post-President's Day. I hope everyone had a great long weekend. I know I did. It was nice and relaxing. Great weather down here in Southern California. And our mission statement is to help the average investor to achieve better than average results. Because, and when you say average, you think average, that's not terrible. Well, the average investor usually has terrible results because they make bad decisions. So our goal is to help you make better decisions and do better than the average person. We're here to answer your questions and provide you some valuable information that you might not look for on your own or might not find on your own. Now, there are some very obvious signs around us that there could be trouble ahead for the market. You might think of three right off the bat when you're taking in the world landscape: Russia, Greece, and oil. Now, the ceasefire in Ukraine is an unknown. How long will it last? Still, it hasn't really lasted. They're still fighting there. And if short-lived, that could have a negative impact on the market, right? If the ceasefire is short-lived. Then we look over to the new government in Greece, and that raises far more questions. You know, what's happening in Ukraine that's interesting and could be impactful? But only if Russia does something very drastic. If it kind of goes on the way it's been, it's not really going to have an impact, I don't think, very much globally. You know, aside from the sanctions that we have put in on Russia. But Greece is really where the problems lie. It's where the questions are. So we're going to talk about that coming up today. Now, there are questions you may want to talk about on this hour. Our lines are open on this Tuesday afternoon. Are there any defensive moves a wise investor could make in anticipation of these world events? What about oil? Is it time to get in now? Are we going to see a global recession in the next couple of years? I would say in the next probably 3 to 5 years, you probably will be. But when will it come? So what is on your mind? I want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART is our number. 888-992-4278 is the number to get through and ask your questions on today's show. So let's talk about it. That's why we're here. Bring your questions or your opinions to us now. 888-99-CHART. Let's take this question from our 24-hour listener line.
I have a 29-year-old daughter. She was working in New York, and she had a retirement plan while she was working. And she since relocated to Oakland. She's not working now. She wants to transfer her retirement plan from her previous employer and start her own retirement plan. And I just wondering, what kind of plan would you recommend for her? She's 29 years old, single, no children. She's not working now.
All right, she's not working now. But she has an old 401k. The first thing she should do is take that old 401k and roll it into an IRA with some sort of broker, and so she can manage the money herself, or have a professional do it. She can have a professional like us do it, a registered investment advisor. She can have a broker who will charge her commissions, which, you know, always gets dicey because what are they selling her? But the first thing she should do is roll that over into an IRA at a brokerage firm, and then you can, you know, go from there and make a decision of how do you want that money invested. First thing you should always figure out is what type of risk. What type of risk does she need? A lot of risk. She's probably young, so more risk is probably makes sense. But maybe she's conservative. That's what everyone needs to do, is understand their risk tolerance. what level of risk can you handle? And until you know that, you really aren't going to be able to figure out where you should be invested. Because while some investment might be great, right? You think of Apple, great company, cheap, good. And I can't say too much great things about Apple. The bottom line is, you have a recession, Apple's going down probably 20, 30%. It's a cyclical name, a kind of premium brand. Sales are surely going to fall in a recession. Now, while Apple might be a great company and great investment, can you handle 20, 30% drop in a name or in your account? And maybe you can, okay? Maybe you can 20, 30%, but what about your broad portfolio? Do you have it diversified well enough? What type of risk does your overall portfolio have? So those are things that she needs to think about and everybody out there needs to think about. Okay? So great call. Now, they're interesting beasts, but we would probably be better off passing up on the opportunity. What makes hedge funds so enticing? We're going to talk about that on today's show. What is a hedge fund? Why is it different than a mutual fund? You know, most people know what a mutual fund is. It's a collection of assets, right? You pool money in with thousands of other people. In the hedge fund space, it might be hundreds of other people. And you invest in certain assets. Well, how does that differ from a mutual fund? How do hedge funds differ from a mutual fund? So we're going to talk about that coming up on today's show. I also want to touch on the strong dollar. The strong dollar, how is it going to affect our economy? Where has it already affected our economy? Positively, negatively? Everyone talks about exports, right? Which are about 14% of our economy, exports. Our exports suddenly become less competitive, right? Because the dollar's stronger. It's more expensive to buy our products if you're overseas. So that's the negative, but it's only 14% of our economy. But there are other negatives that are kind of going to start feeding into our economy, and I think it might give the Federal Reserve pause on raising interest rates, or at least doing it at a quick pace, all right? So we're going to talk about that. Also, how much should you contribute to your 401k? And then broadly, how much should you save? What percentage of your income should you be saving? 2%? 5%? 20%? What's that number? 50%? That's a little extreme, but you see what I'm getting at, right? So we're going to take a look at that and see where you're at and whether you should think about bumping that number up, or maybe you're in a good situation, right? And then I also want to touch on cheap airfares. When's a good time to buy? Right, gas, oil prices have gone down. Plane fares should be going down, but they haven't been going down that much. Not nearly as much as you see oil prices going down. But when's a good time to buy? You know, that we're coming up on the summer in just a few months, right? About 3-4 months, they're going to be summertime. A lot of people take vacations. Should you book a month in advance? 6 months in advance? What day of the week is best to fly? I think that's always interesting. You can save a good amount of money by just booking at the right time. All right, so we're going to talk about that as well. So those are our talking points today, but I also want to hear what is on your mind. What are you thinking about? What is important to you when it comes to money? Do you have a question about a particular asset class, problems that are going on around the world? Let's hear what's on your mind. Now let's take a quick look at today's market. The Dow ended up 29 points, the NASDAQ up 5 points, and the S&P up 3 points. So a very modest up day. It was down most of the day. Midday, you crossed in the positive territory. You kind of sold off near the end of the day, and then the last 5 minutes, you had a quick rally right to near the highs of the day. And really, I think the market's still waiting on what's going on in Greece. Greece is trying to negotiate their way through, if this this new government, they want to get rid of austerity, right? They want to start spending money again. They think that the bailout agreement was too onerous on their economy, and they just are fed up. They don't want to take it anymore. And really, the EU, the Troika, they're not very happy with what's going on in Greece and what their new politicians are trying to push through. And I think there's a decent chance, not a better than 50% chance, but a decent chance they could not come to agreement and Greece could leave the euro. And I think that would put a lot of strain on, I think, our global financial system, at least for the short term. What ramifications would have, you know, in the medium to long term, I think will be yet to be seen. But I think that's what the market is waiting on. The market pretty much believes that they're going to come to some agreement. There's a report that they're going to ask for a bailout extension and on Wednesday, tomorrow. Whether that be granted or not will be interesting. So there's a lot going on in Greece that's very, very important, I think, to the global financial environment. So keep an eye on that. Now, life insurance is nothing more or less than a contract between the insured, the holder of the insurance policy, and the insurer. But it can get very complicated. Understanding life insurance. It's one of Steve's info sheets that can clear things up for you. Remember, Steve was in the insurance industry for a long, long time, so he knows a ton about insurance companies, insurance products, and how they make money, and what you should look out for. So when you're an InvestDoc Insider, you have access to these info sheets and much, much more. You can sign up on InvestTalk.com.
Hey, Justin. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem.
You guys are providing a great service, by the way.
I appreciate it.
Yes, sir, I had a question about Herbalife. Mm-hmm. I believe they're coming up with the earning next Thursday, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, it's got beaten up so badly. What do you think about I was thinking about getting in, and can you run me some numbers on that?
Well, it's certainly not expensive from an earnings perspective. They're going to earn $5.08 a share this year, but that is down about 12% from $5.78 projected last year. Because remember, they're going to report on the fourth quarter of last year. So you have negative earnings growth. You have sales growth that's decelerating. It's still growing at about 4% clip year over year, but I have a feeling that's going to turn negative. But it's a 6 PE. You know, at a 5 earnings, you know, even when it goes down 12% or $5 a share, you're talking about call it 7 PE ratio. So it is cheap. A lot of debt, which I don't like. I'm not a big fan of all that debt. You know, the biggest issue is, you know, their payment structure and their business structure. It's a pyramid MLM marketing structure, which is inherently risky. But it is cheap, and so I kind of like it. I think it is for how cheap it is, and even though sales are going to decline, I would still pick it up. I'm Portfolio Manager Justin Klein. Give us a call at 888-99-CHART. Let's go to George in San Jose. How are you doing, George?
Good afternoon, Justin. Great program. Is this a good time to get to Apple, and if that it is, what is the target for us to sell it? I listen from radio.
Okay, thank you. He's asking about Apple, and you know, like I said at the top of the show, it's a great company. Financially, they're doing fantastic. They're good stewards of capital, even though they have a ton of cash in their balance sheet that probably needs to be put to work, but they're not going to go put it to work in a willy-nilly fashion. They're gonna make sure that they pay the right price for companies that they're buying. You know, they buy a lot of small companies. They bought Beats for about $3 billion, and I have a very strong belief that's going to turn out very, very well. On the chart, it is very overbought right now. So is this a good time to get in? I think in the short term, probably not the best time to get in. But, you know, long term, I still think Apple's a great company. It's still cheap. And, you know, longer term, it's a good time to get in. So are you talking about short term? You're talking about long term. Let's actually, Kevin from Poway is on the line. He wants to ask about Apple as well. How you doing, Kevin?
Hey, Justin. Good morning from you. Got it. You know, there's so much advance and so much pros and cons with Apple. I believe I just heard you mention, my question was going to be, where do you think a price target for Apple is? With all of the talk, whether it be Icon or whether it be other pundits, possible car coming online, the iWatch, high-tech clothes, I mean, it's a big company getting bigger. It's just very tough juggle for an amateur to get a price target. What do you think? Where do you think? What is the crystal ball? How do you read it?
Well, I mean, our value is much higher than it is here, in the 150s. So, you know, it's still undervalued, but yeah, I mean, it's starting to become a complicated beast. They're putting a lot of money into the Apple Watch, and it seems like they're going to launch a subscription service similar to Spotify this year to try to transform iTunes, which has been kind of a laggard in their portfolio for a few years now as people move to subscription-based music streaming as opposed to buying one-off songs. So there is a lot going on. They have a lot of cash. They're borrowing money to buy back shares. But every company is, most companies are very difficult to put a price target on. But, you know, ours is higher than it is here in the 150s, but I don't think that, if you told me your price target is a little bit lower in the 120s, I wouldn't disagree with you either. You know, it's a very complicated company to value, and it's the tech sector. The tech sector notoriously changes the stripes quickly. You know, if another phone company comes out with a great feature and a great product, you know, Apple could lose its luster quickly. So I don't think that's not a possibility either.
I understand what you're saying and how you're portraying the picture. Mm-hmm. Could I go into a little bit different twist with Apple?
For
example, April, they say that they're going to give valuations for buybacks. For example, they're going to give possible takeover targets. They're going to possibly increase the dividend in April. Does that make sense to you?
Apple increasing their dividend? Yeah, I mean, I don't see why they... I was a little shocked they didn't increase their dividend this last quarter. So, I mean, their payout ratio is 25%. They could easily go higher. You know, how does that work with all the cash they have overseas versus here in the U.S.? You know, I don't know. I'm not their CFO, so I don't know that mix. So that could be a little bit of hurdle to raising the dividend, but I still think they should. I'm not sure what you were talking about with valuation-wise. What were your...
The point of the speaker, another advisor, a pundit, was mentioning that April seems to be a month that Apple may have a habit or are leaning towards for possibly discuss their buybacks, discuss their dividends, discuss their takeover.
Oh, you're saying how much? You mean how much the shares they bought back in total?
Or maybe even what their new buyback program is.
Oh, you mean increasing their buyback program?
Right.
I could see them doing that as well. I mean, they have a lot of cash, but I think the market expects that. I don't think that's something that they don't. I don't think the market expects that Apple is going to end their buyback program. I think if Apple ended their buyback program, the stock would sink pretty decently. So I don't think that's going to be a huge catalyst for a move higher. I think they just need to increase or continue with their momentum in their business. And I think Apple will continue higher. And as long as that happens, they'll be fine.
I thank you and hi to the gang.
Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it. Coming up next half hour, everybody wants their investments to grow in one way or another. But that's not necessarily growth investing. A definition coming up. You probably have your own money questions as well. We want to hear from you. I want to know what is on your mind. We have about 25 minutes left in the show to get your call in, so please do it sooner rather than later. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us right now on InvestTalk.
Our InvestTalk podcast distribution is made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. When you're an InvestTalk insider, you have new opportunities to learn with concise, simplified reports written personally by Steve. Important topics, annuities, wills and trusts, retirement programs, life insurance, an updated ETF list, and more. You can sign up right now. It's free on InvestTalk.com.
Now, Steve is in San Jose today, all booked up with appointments for our current clients and our InvestTalk listeners as well. And he'll be in San Ramon in the Bay Area tomorrow for his day-long individual retirement review sessions. He does have a couple slots open left in San Ramon tomorrow. So if you want to make an appointment with Steve to sit down and talk with him about, you know, whatever's going on in your investment world, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Make an Appointment button, and the staff will take care of the rest. All right, so do that if you want to meet with Steve tomorrow. Now let's talk quickly about our main talking point today, about hedge funds. What are hedge funds? Now most people think of a hedge fund as a mutual fund, like, you know, something similar to a mutual fund. It is. It's a pile of money that investors have pooled together so that can be managed by a professional, right? That's what mutual funds are. Well, hedge funds differ in a few key ways. One, while mutual funds are highly regulated, hedge funds are not. It's kind of the Wild West of the investment world. And they're required to disclose a lot less kinds of investments than mutual funds. And they can invest in a lot of different things that mutual funds can't, such as types of derivatives and things like that. Now, while just about any investor can buy shares of a mutual fund, hedge funds are restricted to accredited investors who qualify mainly through being wealthy, having a net worth of at least $1 million, or an income of $200,000 or more. So that's accredited investors. That's how you get into these hedge funds. There are some unaccredited investors that can get in, but it's usually a very limited number. Now, hedge funds can be much more secretive, like I said before, and can invest in a wider range of investments, and some that are much riskier than mutual funds. And while mutual funds can sell shares within a day, if you want to, right? You can liquidate in a day. Hedge funds often limit selling some or all of your investments only once per month or quarter or year, and sometimes you're locked up for a year or more. Okay? And then it comes to fees. While a lot of mutual funds are less than 1% fee per year to manage that money, typically hedge funds are 2 and 20, meaning they charge 2% a year plus 20% of the gains. So say you have $1 million in a hedge fund, they're going to charge you 2%, right? So that's 20 grand. And then say they make you 10%, right? $100,000 on your $1 million. They're going to take 20% of that profit. So you're left with 80 grand minus your 20 grand in that fee, that 2% fee. Well, you're left with 6% when they made you 10%, right? So you know, some even charge 3 and 30. But ever since the financial crisis, fees have kind of been coming down. They're now average about 1.6% per year, which is still much higher than mutual funds. But you can negotiate lower performance fees. So sometimes you can get less than 20% of the profits, right? They only take 10 or 15%. But usually there is some performance fee there. So what else? How do mutual funds, why are mutual funds charging such big fees? Well, in 2014, only 22, not 22%, only 22 hedge funds outperformed the S&P 500. Now, that's pretty atypical, but from 2008 to 2013, the average hedge fund managed to generate returns after fees of only 3.6% a year. Not very good. Now, while solid past performance doesn't guarantee good future performance, any hedge fund, as well as any stock or mutual fund, can have exceptional good years and exceptionally bad ones. And that can skew average returns. So understand that, don't chase. It's just like, they're just like any funds. So you can have good years, you can have great years. You have to look at it over the long term. You know, no advisor, nobody's going to outperform the S&P every year. Bottom line, just how it is. No advisor is going to outperform the S&P every year. Now, advisors can outperform the S&P over extended period of times, regularly. And that's what you should look for. So don't get mixed up in year-over-year returns, because those can be misleading on the upside and the downside. 888-99 chart is our anytime number. If you listen to our podcast and want to get a question to us, just use that number. Leave a message and we'll answer your question on the next Invest Talk.
Hi, my name is Jim. I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota. I listen to you on a podcast. I have a ETN that I'm interested in hearing about. It's symbol SBND. That's Sam, Banana, Nancy, David. Is now a good time to pick up some shares of this? Thanks, Steve.
All right, he's looking at SBND. This is an ETF that will go up with interest rates. So if interest rates go up, SBND will go up. And it has been going up this month. Pretty good move this month from about $3.78. Let's see what it closed at the end of last month. Closed at the end of last month at $3.70, and now it's at $4.65. That's a pretty big move. And the reason that is because it's leverage, 3x leverage. So if you think interest rates are going to go up, this is a good one to be in. But remember, it's a trading vehicle, so you don't want to hold it for a ton of time. Because there's tracking error and things like that. It's an ETN, so there's less tracking error than an ETF. But, if you do think interest rates are going up, this is a good thing to be in. I think it's more of a trading vehicle. I think it's probably a little overbought in the short term. But if you think the 30-year bond, that's what it is. It tracks the 30-year treasury bond, shorts the 30-year treasury bond. So if interest rates go up, it will go up. Because if interest rates go up, the 30-year treasury bond price goes down. Right? So it's shorting the treasury bond. So if you think interest rates are going to go up, this is a good place to be. Now time for Invest Talk 101. Now if your retirement portfolio can be called a growth portfolio, then you have to think of it as being pretty aggressive. Now to get growth, you have to take risk. If you want it returns, you have to take risk. If you're looking for real growth, you're not going to buy big blue chip companies. You know, the big brands, the household names of the world of business are not going to give you big growth to your portfolio. It might give you steady growth, right? Because 2% of growth a year, it's still growth. It may not be rapid growth, but it's still growth. You know, so the rapid growth that you would want from a quote-unquote growth portfolio is behind the big blue chip names. They're not going to grow very much because they have huge revenue bases. The markets that they serve are pretty saturated. They've probably gotten to most of the clients and the customers that they're going to get, and that's how they got so big. You know, they're more reliable. They're not going anywhere fast. So a more defensive, low-risk portfolio is usually dedicated to generating income. It's going to be designed to preserve your assets, to preserve your capital. And that's usually what these big blue chip names are for. So growth is all about potential. It's certainly a more exciting form of investing, but if there's room to grow, then there's also room to shrink. Now, on the other hand, value investing is more about finding a bargain. The growth of a stock value could come from the fact that it could be underpriced. The stock is trading below where it should be and is likely to take a bump up in the near to medium term because it's so cheap, and investors are starting to will eventually realize that this company is cheap. Now, Morningstar classifies all stocks and stock mutual funds as growth, value, or blended, a mix of growth and value investments. So when you're making investments, understand what you're investing in. Growth can take on various forms, but traditional growth investing usually means paying up. Usually you're paying up and you're chasing that growth, right? You think that growth is going to continue. And if it continues for an extended period of time, paying up for that growth makes sense, and it'll bear fruit over the longer term. It'll make sense. But if you buy growth near the peak, when the future growth is not nearly as good as the market is expecting, that's when you experience big pain from growth investing, because all of a sudden, those shares of those companies that are trading at premiums to the market suddenly become more aligned with traditional market valuations. And that usually means prices of those stocks come down. So you need to understand the difference between growth investing, value investing, defensive investing, income investing. Understand your technique, understand your strategy, and understand what your needs are. Maybe some people don't need to be growth investors, maybe because they have enough money and they need to move to a more defensive type of investing. And that's what we do for our clients, figure out where they need to be. They need to be growth, maybe they need to be income. Where do they need to be to make sure they get where their goals are, right? So that's Invest Talk 101. If you have a question on this topic or any other money matters, it's time to check in now. At 888-99-CHART, we have about 10 more minutes left in the show, so give us a call. You can also make a personal note that will come directly to me. All you have to do is click on the Contact Justin, or there's also a Contact Steve button there as well on investtalk.com.
We're glad you're with us on Invest Talk today, and whether you're 20-something or something just past retirement, we're here to help you make better investing and money decisions along the way. But we need to know what you need to know. 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to James in New York. How are you doing, James?
I'm good. How are you tonight?
Doing well. What can you do for you?
In the interest of putting my portfolio, given a few more mid and small cap stocks, I've been doing some research, a couple things I might like to add. I was curious about ticker symbol KEG and ticker symbol AUY are two that I'm kind of got my eye on.
Okay. You're looking at Key Energy Services, correct?
Yes, KEG. That's correct.
Yeah. So they provide onshore rig-based well services to oil and gas companies in the U.S., Mexico, Colombia, Ecuador, and Russia. So this is an oil service company, about a $346 million market cap, not very big, but they're obviously taking it on the chin because of the drop in oil prices. I'll give you this, it's cheap, 0.26 times book value, so it's trading at a quarter of its book value, which is good from a deep value perspective. They're not going to make money this year, probably not going to make money next year unless oil prices rebound. But even before oil prices fell, they were still losing money. So I'm wondering why in 2013, when oil prices were so high, why did they still lose money? That's what worries me here. And then they have not a ton of debt, 61% debt to equity ratio. That's not low, but it's also not super high either. So I'm wondering, can they? Does that debt roll over? Are they going to have trouble refinancing that debt? Because, you know, a year or two ago, it was easy to borrow money, even if you're losing money in the oil sector. But in today's environment, if oil stays in the $50, $60 range, that could be a lot more difficult. So I think it's a very high-risk name. Could they survive? Sure. But it's definitely in the higher risk tier of the oil industry, which is notoriously also a higher risk industry to be in. So it depends on what type of risk you want to take. I personally wouldn't take that risk. Okay?
Yes, absolutely.
Makes sense? Okay. And then you were asking about AUY, which is Umana Gold. So if you're looking to add some gold exposure, you know, this is another gold name that's having some issues. They downgraded their production for this year. Earnings to fall 14% this year. Still yields about 1.5%, and they have no debt. Trades at half book value, which is cheap. I think it's cheap. I like the name. It may not be my favorite name in the gold sector, but I like how cheap it is, and I like the fact they have no debt and the fact that they're still making money. All right, James? Thanks for calling in. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. I'm portfolio manager Justin Klein. Our money management firm, KPP Financial, offers four different programs suited to different needs and life situations, like our balanced income portfolio. Just go to investtalk.com and you can find out more. The strong dollar has been really one of the main catalysts for oil falling. You know, it talks about oversupply, and it's true, there's a lot of oversupply, but the dollar is a very, very big influencer of oil prices. But it also has big influence on other things as well. And I think this is going to be a pretty decent drag on our economy, and it's something that I think policymakers, the Federal Reserve, is going to pay attention to. Now, first, falling import prices are feeding into lower consumer inflation, particularly for core goods, right? So, and then second, cheaper imports also have a damping effect on economic output. So let's talk about these two things. So there's a CPI, the Consumer Price Inflation Index, right? The stronger dollar is significantly impacted by reduced import prices. Now already, this inflation subcomponent is running at -0.8% year on year, which is the sharpest drop since 2007. Now, this deflationary force on overall core CPI will persist over the medium term as well. Now, all else being equal, a stronger dollar makes U.S. exports more expensive in external markets, right? Now, the new export orders subcomponent of the ISM suggests that this effect is already beginning to materialize. In January, this series sank into contractionary territory, 49.5%. Versus 52, not percent, sorry, it's above 50 is growth, below 50 is contraction. It's at 49.5 versus 52 previously. And this is the first time that's happened since late 2012. Now, Bloomberg economists have found this series to be a useful leading indicator of overall exports in the GDP account. So if it remains at this level, it could spell the end of the positive contribution from exports, which have been surprisingly an important driver of growth in the current economic cycle. So that's going to now be a drag. Now, some analysts are dismissing the drag in the economy from a stronger dollar based on the argument that exports are just 14% of our overall economy. Right? It's all about the consumer. Well, the export sector won't be the only casualty, as fourth quarter GDP results showed. Now, while good exports slowed to 1.9% from 7.5% previously, the dollar appreciates. As the dollar appreciates, consumers tend to shift towards cheaper imported goods, and this comes at the cost of domestic producers. Right. So, you think of the producers that are making things to send here to the U.S. Right. They suddenly can now charge less for their product because they're getting dollars, and dollars are worth more. And when they translate into their currency, they're getting more. So they can now charge less for their products. And that all of a sudden hurts our domestic producers. And shoppers are already shifting towards less expensive products from abroad. Now in January, import prices showed an intensifying decline. And this is going to be an issue. So the dollar is tightening financial conditions. So effectively is already starting to accomplish the same goal the Fed will be pursuing when it ultimately begins to raise rates. So the end of QE and the expectation of higher interest rates has created a stronger dollar and created tighter financial conditions. Now the Fed will say, we're not tightening monetary policy. We're just making it less loose, right? But less loose is tighter. I don't care how you phrase it, it's tighter. And the stronger dollar is doing that. So I think everyone needs to keep an eye on that, and I think that's a bigger drag to our overall economy than most analysts are pricing in. Now, before we close the hour, it's a very useful tool, one that we'll have, that we have included into our consultations with many, many new clients. It's a risk analysis tool that measures your comfort with risk and helps us determine whether a portfolio matches up. It's free for all listeners to use on investtalk.com. I'm portfolio manager Justin Klein, and for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP Financial, I thank you for listening today. Let's talk again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.